Okay, so today is the 3rd of February, 2020. Today is the 8th of Shvat, Tav Shin Pei. And after conclude today, Perek Yud Beis. So one small note, and then one note that's a little bit larger. So in the Chidushi Halev, he quotes the following. Looking at the wrong one. There you go. He quotes from Maseches Smachos. What is Maseches Smachos? So Maseches Smachos is a collection of braises, mostly having to do with the laws of Avelis. When you learn the laws of Avelis, you need to have a Smachos nearby. So it's sort of collective braises. I think you could find it. I think you could find it usually in the back of Avodah Zarah, in the back of Maseches Avodah Zarah, the back of Menachos, one of those two. But anyways, I think of Avodah Zarah. Anyways, Isav Maseches Smachos, v'nitatzdem al mizbechosam. So one of the mitzvos that we have in this parak is that you have to break their mizbechos. So the Gemara, the Raisa asks, so machatu eitzim avanim. What did they do, right? What did the mizbeach do? What did the wood and what did the stones do? So elofi shabala adam takala yadayim amar kasu v'nitatzdem. That because a person sinned through them, the pasuk tells us you got to destroy it. And then we have a kavachomer. Ma ima eitzim v'avanim she'im behem lo schus v'lo chova v'lo tova v'lo ra'a. Right? If wood and stones that don't have merits and don't have debts and don't do good and don't do bad, but because a takala came through them, the Torah says you have to break them. A person who would cause others to sin, and lead people from the chayim to maves, halachas kam v'kama. How much more so bad things are going to happen to people that cause other people to sin. Similarly, it says v'araktas eishav yaseh beimah, that you kill the woman and you kill the animal if they're involved in, you know, immoral relations or bestiality. So Yimadam Chait Behima Machati says, okay, but what did the animal do? Rather because a person did something bad through it. Similarly, mine, Behima Shaim Baskus, the animal doesn't have any merits or good, it doesn't choose anything, and yet the Torah says that if a takala comes through them, a disaster comes through them, the Torah says it needs to be destroyed. A person who caused people to sin, alachas kam vakama, how much more so things are going to, the person is going to be held responsible. So the question is. Right. So he asks. So he asks Rav Henoch Leibowitz, but we have a problem. How could you compare the halachos of a person to the halacha of a tree? Right. Gayim avdu es ilanos bal korcha shel ilanos. Right. The fact that the tree was served, so that was against the will of the tree. That had nothing to do with it. The tree didn't do anything. The tree just stood there. And still, Hashem says you got to destroy the ilanos. So, a person must have done something if he's going to be involved in some sort of sin. So, rather, when he says the alkorchan, rather Hashem is saying that you destroy, you would ma'avdan lo b'toras onas shel chatam el rak mishum shebal la'adam takal yadam. Rather, the reason the tree is being destroyed or the animal is being destroyed is not because it caused anything to happen, but rather because an aveira happened through it. Right? You can't say the tree caused the person to worship it as a Avodah Zarah. So what about a person then? What about a person? A person didn't do anything, meaning the comparison of the brisa seems to be, if a tree caused people to sin, then it's going to be destroyed. How much worse if a person caused people to sin? Yeah, but a person causing people to sin, he's convincing the people, right? He's actively doing something in order to convince. That seems to be what the Medrash is comparing. So Rana says, no, it can't be that that's what it's comparing. It must be the person is compared to the tree. A tree didn't do anything and cause people to sin is destroyed. So a person should also. Okay, but a person didn't do anything. And what happens to that person? Right? So the reason, why doesn't a person get destroyed? So the reason the person doesn't get destroyed is because of the reason of Onis Rachmana Patrik, right? You have an exemption, right? If a person didn't actually do anything, a person happened something and he wasn't his fault, so Hashem exempts him from punishment. And Fanuch says that's what's going on here. The Medrash says that a tree gets destroyed. The tree is lacking the dispensation of Onis Rachmana Patrik. Hashem says, I'm not going to exempt the tree if it wasn't your fault. But a person, Hashem says, I'll exempt you because it's not your fault. But what does that mean? Right? That means that Hashem is exempting the person from punishment, but yet it means there is somewhat of an obligation that a person would have for that punishment. In theory, even though you didn't do anything, right? There is a problem that is caused. A person should be punished if a sin is done through them. And yet Hashem says, I'll exempt you. But there still is a feeling then of responsibility that a person should have if something gets done, if something gets done through him. Even though he didn't have any kavanah, he's still fit to be destroyed, just like the tree is fit to be destroyed. But he points out that the same thing also happens to zechuyos. The same thing also happens in a meritorious way. I mean, if a person will lose credit if a sin happens through him, same thing, a person will gain credit if positive things are done through him. And that also is learned out from a section there in Maseches Machos. So what is that? So the Medrash says that there's a story that Rabbi Akiva apparently buried one of his children. So Niskapsu kal gadol lichvor es beno shel Rabbi Akiva. That a large group gathered together in order to bury the child, the son of Rabbi Akiva. So tzilo safsal v'esakvaros. So Rabbi Akiva said, bring out a chair to me, the Beis HaKvaros. So Yoshev Vidarish, not sure why he needed a chair, maybe he was older, he sat down and he darshened to them and he said, Yodea Nishu Ben Olam Hava. He says, I know that this boy is a Ben Olam Hava. Why? Shezichas Haravim, because he caused merits to the Ravim. Shekol HaMezakas Haravim in Chet Bal Yadav. That person brings merits to the masses. So a sin won't, sin didn't come through him. But if he caused people to sin, so he wouldn't be able to do tshuva. But what was, we don't have a recording of this. What was the merits that he brought to the congregation? So it sounds like, so it suggests Rav Henoch here, that what was the merit that he brought to the people? That the people came to bury him. That there was a mitzvah to be done of burying the dead. And that's what he did. Now, did he have an active role to play in that? There's no less of an active role than he did. Right? It is the simen and the siba. What does it mean, the simen and the siba? So those are lumdisha terms analysis of Gemara, those are the terms that are sometimes used, right? Is something the reason that something has happened, or is something only an indication that something has happened, right? Off the top of my head, right? A shor that gurus three times, so it changed from being a tam to being a muad. Now, is that because he gored three times, that is the reason he is becoming switching from being a tam to a muad? Or is it that is an indication that really it should be a muad, right? Is it an indicator, or is that the cause? I'm not sure that's really the best example. So I'm not sure if it's an afkamim, just off the top of my head, that's what popped in here. So he suggests so how do we know that he is a great person? So first of all, it's a simon. The fact that so many people came indicates, right, that he has merits coming to him. Because why? Because he is causing merits to come to other people, and that wouldn't come through a person who doesn't deserve it. Right? So he gets it in both directions. Shemagalgun zuchus haidei zakai, v'chamot eisa v'brais hasham l'halim. V'chorakash, he says, lama hai zuchus b'ad benod, why does he get a merit? That many people came to bury him, right? He's dead, right? What did he do? So rather, what do we see? It says, she'odda mekabel schar gadol b'ad zeh she'nase mitzvah v'glalim. That a person gets a lot of reward when there's mitzvahs done through him, even if it's against his will, and he didn't even know that it was going on. So what do we do about that? He seems to be talking about when a person doesn't do anything and good things come out of it, or a person doesn't do anything and bad things come out of it. Or at the end of the day, a person's not doing anything. So what does one learn from this? So probably it means to put yourself in situations where in an environment where good things will come out of your existence as opposed to bad things that will come out of one's existence. So that's one thought that coming out of the earlier part of the section where it discusses the mitzvah of destroying all of the mizbechos. Now at the very end of the parak, there is a Ramban. The very end of the parak goes once again into the issue of Avodah Zarah. that Hashem is going to kick out all the non-Jews from the land that you're attempting to inherit. And he shamer lecha pendenakish achrim acharei hishamdom mipanecha, and he says, and be careful lest you be attracted to them and like keep them in place. And lo taseh kein l'Hashem elokecha, he cholso alas Hashem asher senei asu le'elokecha. Pasuk lamed aleph, you shouldn't do this to Hashem, your God, for everything that is an abomination to Hashem, asher senei asu le'elokim, he hates, ki gam espenechem v'espenoseichem yisru ve'esh le'elokecha. Even their sons and daughters, they have burnt into they have burnt to send up to their gods. So the Ramban here, somewhat lengthy Ramban, but the Ramban concludes with the following comment. The Ramban says, he said, this seems to be very comparable to what it said earlier in Pasuk Dalet. What did it say there? So in Pasuk Dalet of the same parak Yudbeis Pasuk Dalet, what does it say? There, v'ibadatam esraman, lo tasu kein la'ashem elokeichem. That you should get rid of them. That's the previous. Get rid of all the avodah zarah and don't do this. L'Hashem your God. So what is the? Why is it? Why does the Torah seem to be repeating itself? It says Valderech Hapshat, says the Ramban. Hizir berosh haseder lo tasu kein l'Hashem elokeichem. Earlier when it says don't do this with your God. Li'avdo kelohei ha'amim al harim harim b'karben osav. Right, it's referring to worshiping Hashem with Hashem's offerings as the God of other nations are worshipped on high mountains. Meaning to worship Hashem in the way that Hashem wants to be worshipped, but in the way that the non-Jews worship Him. Meaning what? So instead of doing karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, to go onto the mountaintops and do it there. Right? To sort of leave the synagogue to do Hashem's work, but to do it elsewhere. Okay? What about here? The atav of parsha, but at this point in the parsha, Azos, hezer lo tasu kein l'Hashem elokecha. It says, don't do this to Hashem. Li'avdo b'mikdasho bi'avodos shelahem. To worship Hashem with their avoda. Okay, so they're different things. One is to do Hashem's avoda, but outside, plus non-Jews would do things all over the place. And the second thing is to do it inside, to do it in the shul, but to do foreign avodas, to bring in other worshiping, to other forms of worship, and integrate that within our own worship. So, what is that? How does one? Where do we see that? How does that come about? So the Sforno, so again, the comment in the Chidush Yalev. Chidush Yalev makes a comment from the Sforno. Lo tosev alav ki ulai tosev davar nimas etzlo yisbarach. Don't add on to it. This is a form of bal tosev. Because you're probably going to make a mistake. You'll add on something that is nimas to Hashem. Kvo sheyeh im tirtze lahosef mini avodos kelo yisbarach. Shel pamim ti avodos hanosefes davar nimas etzlo yisbarach. If you think you're adding something on, very often those things end up not being appropriate things that are being added. So, and what comes from that? So that don't add things on because you have to be afraid about something. Right? What is the fear? So the pasuk seems to spell out its own fear because you know if you want to add things on, right? What is going to happen? Ki kol tovos Hashem. It's all disgusting. Why? Because they end up offering their children and burning them up in a fire. Right? So it seems to be the implication is, don't do this, because if you do it, you know, one thing leads to another, it will lead to mixed dancing, and if it doesn't lead to mixed dancing, it will lead to offering a child sacrifice. So, really? Like, it's going to go so far? How could that be? How does one, can't the person figure that out? So he says, well, maybe, but like Yishum Shazem Yishum, so he says, well, yeah, but Tzarech Lamashah, feeling me spoiled, even if you think about it very well, it's possible that you make a mistake, and maybe you'll add things on. He says, yeah, but this, right, V'tim Re'aseichel Mechayiv Shakravas Habanim Hudavar Nimas, right, but we know that offering child sacrifice is disgusting, right? So how could you possibly, like, why is that the example? I can think of other things that are going to be brought. Why would that be the example of something that I would be, right? Can't we sort of put up ideas in our own mind, rules in our own mind that will avoid us from going all the way down that road? He says, "V'ulayi shlomer." No, shezem yishum hashpas hagayim. That where would one come about to do this, to do the child sacrifice, it's because of the hashpa from the non-Jews. She came in Shu Shama Shagayim Asukain, that you hear that they do it. Lachain who machlipadaitu shenachon lasos kemosam. Right, so therefore it might enter one's mind that it might be correct to do as they do. That it might be coming from a good place, and you might be having might be influenced from things going on the outside. And Hashem says absolutely not, you shouldn't go ahead and do it. He quotes a story of Uzziyahu, the at the very end of Sefer Divrei Yamim. He does appear in Sefer Malachim as well, but the end of Divrei Yamim, it says that he was one of the good kings, but he did something that was pretty bad. What did he do? He went and offered ketores inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So that's a big no-no. Shouldn't he have realized that was a big no-no? He says, well, yeah, but he convinced himself, no, wouldn't it be great if I went ahead and did this? Other people have suffered for this in the past. And Shlomo HaMelech didn't do it. But it would be a good thing. It would be a good thing if I had onto me. And what ultimately was his downfall? That he went against the Mesorah, that he went against the traditions. How does one come about? How does one figure out what are good enhancements to do, good things to do in our shuls versus things that are perhaps not such good things to do in our shuls? So he suggests that it revolves around, that they have to stay within the tradition. They have to stay within the Mesorah. And that is considered to be a very good, a very important guide. He has some other sources, but I want to just show one other. Maybe we'll get back to it if we have time. But Rav Soloveitchik also picks up, talks about this Ramban here at the end, and actually suggests that it's an additional prohibition of uvichuku seichem lo seilehu, that there is a mitzvah that we've had other places, and we've discussed it in other places, that there is a prohibition of not following in the ways of non-Jews. And if one looks up in Shulchan Aruch under that section, generally it has to do with wear modes of dress and clothing and activities and things like that. So he suggests that this Ramban is sort of extending a different type of Chukas Hagayim, in that the rules are much stricter when it comes to doing things in shuls. Excuse me. High time in Yerusha Isra Miyuchad who shalolah he spalo bit. Well, and then and what would be the example of that? Sort of Soloveitchik living through the middle of the 20th century. He says, "Mi high time in Yerusha. For this reason, it is prohibited a specific prohibition shalolah he spalo bit taruvus anashim nashim to not daven mixed men and women ulah hispal hashliach tzibur upon of kalpeya am or to lead the shliach to be the shliach tzibur and to daven facing the rest of the." Of the shul, velasos chalonos shel zechuches tzivus, or to make stained glass windows, velovo sharav v'chazen chalukim shechorim miyuchadim, or for the rabbi and the chazen to wear distinctly black clothing, right? So we sort of put on those types of things. What is he getting at here? So all these things are changes that were bitterly fought over in the 19th and 20th centuries. They were things that were brought in by the reform. And where was it? And they were fought bitterly against by, starting from people, the likes of the Chassam Sofer, and going all the way through the 20th century through the Mechitza battles of the 50s, and it sort of whittled out around the 50s, when at that point there was really a full split, and just became totally official that Orthodox shuls have to 100% have separate seating and a mechitza, and non-Orthodox shuls would not. They went the other way. So in the if you go through the literature of that time, like the Tshuvos of Rav Moshe or the writings of Rav Soloveitchik, and they throw things out like, it's absolutely an Isser D'oraisa to daven in a shul that doesn't have a mechitza. So it's like, where does that come from? How did they figure that out? Now, I understand that it's important, but where are you going to find the pasuk that it says that without a mechitza you're not allowed to daven there? In fact, I remember when I was my first year in college, so I was offered a job to be the chazan, a chazan sheni in a shul someplace, in some place in Queens where there weren't too many Jews living there anymore. And I went to go visit the shul beforehand. And I walked in, and the mechitza was pretty low. And the person said to me, "Don't worry, you might be looking at the mechitza and think that it's low. Don't worry, we were assured that it fulfills every requirement in the Shulchan Aruch, every requirement of mechitza as it appears in the Shulchan Aruch." Okay, that's great, except the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention mechitza anywhere. There is no, the only place that it mentions it is sort of out of context, and sort of like the halacha is about moving it on Shabbos and things like that. But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, you're not going to find any rule that it's required to have mechitza. That's just the way that it was. So how could they come around now and say it's absolutely Yehorig Val Yavor to daven in a shul without mechitza? Where would that kind of language come from? So perhaps the answer is that it's, what's the source? What is the motivating factor to have that, to have mixed seating, or to have instead of the chazan facing forward to face the congregation? Or where is that coming from? So it's coming from the churches. So suggests Rav Soloveitchik that's from this pasuk. I mean, that's not the regular prohibition of chukas hagayim. That's the special pasuk. There's a specific prohibition to bring outside practices into the Beis HaKnesses. Based on this Ramban, Ve'ata parsha zos hizir lo tasakin l'Hashem elokeichem li'avdo b'mikdasho bi'avodos shelahem. To daven in our Beis HaMikdash, we're using their avodos. That's an addition, that perhaps is the prohibition. He goes on to quote, and I've wondered about this, perhaps this is the reason. I've noticed that we have Chabad people that daven with us, often they will walk out before Yigdal. And I always wonder about it. I've always to ask them, I just always forget when I have the chance. But here, apparently the Arizal was very machmed against saying Yigdal. So why was he so, and nobody knew, but Tam Kpeda so, Bazel Lohivil. But apparently the Arizal got rid of Yigdal. Okay. So he suggests, "Vishamati b'shem Rabbi." This is Rav Shechter saying. I heard from the Rav. Shalomar hamanim kaze hakol besocho kol ikrei hamuna yesh b'mishum chukas akum. Because what is Yigdal? Yigdal is actually a rendition of the Yud Gimel Midas of the Yud Gimel Ikari Hamuna of the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam. Lo kambi Yisrael kamosha o. Right? There will be nobody else like Moshe or misim. Or the end, right? It ends with talk about the Chiyas HaMeisim. So where did that come from? So he says, so Shekin Nog B'Tfila Eitzel HaKatulim, the Catholics, that they have Sheomrim Es HaKatechism. Do you know what that is? I meant to look it up, to Google what this one. Yeah. There's some lachs or befeh al kol ikrei emunah zam, that apparently they end their services with a pronouncement of faith. So where did Yigdal come from? So he suggested that maybe Yigdal came from, in a way, copying the non-Jews, that they end with a declaration of their faith, and we end with a declaration of our faith. So he says that maybe that would be a prohibition of this. Now, I was like wondering about, well, how do we end Yom Kippur, right? The end of Yom Kippur is with Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. I got to find out a little bit more about this. But anyways, apparently maybe that might be the source, that some are hesitant to conclude davening with the tefillah of Yigdal. And he continues on here. Actually, this is sort of a halachic piece, where he says, "Shehevias apazu yisham lecha ben tinei shachareim ke'achan makoros l'israchu kazakayim bilu lefi drashas ha-gemara kol osa parsha kai." That he connects chukas hagayim, that the prohibition of following the ways of non-Jews to avodah zarah. What specifically would be that connection? So perhaps it's using this pasuk is sort of the extension of part of chukas, a significant part of chukas hagayim is bringing in the issues of avodah zarah into our congregation. So anyways, that perhaps is any time that you have a change in the shul. And change in practice, one has to be very, very careful where it came from. Is it because it's from internal sources or part of our internal Mesorah, or is it part of something coming from the external? Because we do live in a society that obviously has that we do know what's going on in the non-Jewish world, and we have to be careful about those influences seeping into our congregations, not necessarily, and sometimes in ways that we don't think so. I mean, sometimes the things that we sort of take as good values that are being promoted by the outside world are sometimes seeping their way in, which really are antithetical to Torah, and we sort of are stuck into that issue, right? And you know, people come up with very nice ideas, but often they are coming from non-Jewish sources, and one has to be very careful when figuring out how to continue on, specifically in the Beis Knesses, based on this Ramban that appears at the end of Perek Yud Beis. Okay, let's stop here, and Mr. Shem, pick up.